and
the conference is now being recorded.
Okay, they'll probably join in at the same time.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Okay.
My name is
Hello.
My name is Gloria Spratley Brown, and I will serve as your facilitator for the conference call today. We will be discussing the funding opportunities for the 2014-2015 Adult Education and Family Literacy Education Grant.
Yeah, right.
All right. With that said, we'll start with a couple little tips on conference calls. Because of the background noise, we will ask that you please mute your phones by pressing star 6. Please mute your phones by pressing star 6. This will minimize the background noise. Today we'll be going over the competitive grant application for four different areas: adult general education, correction education, Native American education, and English literacy and civics education. Throughout the presentation this afternoon, I will be referencing a couple of documents. So if you would please make sure you have the PowerPoint available, because I'll be referencing that document. You can access the PowerPoint on the Career and Adult Education homepage. For those of you that perhaps do not have that link, if you'll go to the Department of Education's page, which is www.fldoe.org, you will find a link on the left-hand side for the Career and Adult Education Division. If you click that link, once you're on the division's homepage, middle of the left-hand side, you will see federal grants. That will be the actual grant page that houses all of our competitive and non-competitive funding opportunities. Center of the page, to the top, you'll see adult education. You will find a memo, presentation, survey, this morning's playback, and reviewer registration. So with that said, we'll have the PowerPoint presentation that I'll use during the discussion this afternoon. I will also have for reference the Adult General Education Competitive Grant Application, also known as the RFP. We call it a Request for Proposal. I'll have that document that I will be referencing. You will find that I may toggle back and forth between the two documents, but I will identify the page number and the section that I'm speaking from. We will follow the agenda as outlined on page 5 of the PowerPoint presentation. To help minimize the background noise, I'm going to put the conference on mute from my office.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
Okay. So if you're looking at slide 5 with the PowerPoint presentation, you will see the agenda, and we'll try and stick as close to this agenda as possible. You'll have a couple of presentations from Zelda Rogers, and you'll have an accountability and reporting presentation from Tara McLaren. Thank you, Tara. And online survey and reviewer registration by Julie Dillard. With that said, we'll move right into slide 6. The goals for the conference call this afternoon would be to provide you with funding information, pertinent information pertaining to the programmatic implementation of adult education, reporting information and requirements, and to actually go over the request for proposal submission to inform you of all the requirements necessary to be accepted in the competitive process. Because on the phone calls this evening, we may have individuals that are familiar with adult ed and have served adult ed through this federal program for a number of years, but perhaps we will have some individuals on the call today that this is their first opportunity or first time applying for this federal source. So with that, I'm going to do a little background information, and many of the presentations today will be speaking from a general perspective so that we can give enough background that all participants, all eligible agencies on the call that wish to apply would have all of the necessary information. With that said, the funding source that we will specifically discuss this afternoon is the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act of 1998. It is part of the Workforce Investment Act, and it's Title II of that act. We do have links on our webpage to this particular act. If you choose to look at the entire act, you can access it from our website. Our priorities. I've highlighted some key terms here that we will be talking about throughout our presentation this afternoon, but it's to serve and assist adults to become literate. We want to help our adults to enter employment, retain employment, transition to post-secondary education, and ultimately to become self-sufficient. We also want to assist adults in completing their high school diploma or its equivalent. And we want our parents to be an active and engaged part of the education of their children. So you will find that there is a component within the act that allows for family literacy interactive activities and funding. Speaking of that, under the act, there are two options under the adult general education. I mentioned briefly the family literacy education, which simply means you can use funds to support the partnership between the parent and the child in the child's educational development. You can also use dollars from this fund source to support English literacy education, again, helping individuals with limited English proficiency and also helping them to achieve the competency in the English language. But we'll speak a little bit more about a separate funding stream that the federal government offers specifically for English literacy and civics education. But you can use the adult general dollars as found in this particular application for that purpose. Our targeted population would be adults, and it, according to the law, it means below the post-secondary level, the individuals 16 years of age or older, who are not enrolled or required to be enrolled in secondary school under the law, and who lack the proficiency of the basic English educational skills necessary for individuals to function, also do not have a secondary diploma or its equivalent, and unable difficulties speaking, reading, and/or writing the English language. So it pretty much covers individuals. We talked about do not have a secondary diploma. You may have a situation where an individual meet that third criteria, unable to speak, read, or write the English language, but yet hold a secondary high school diploma. Well, if they are tested and tape test out at 8.9 or below, and are in need of the services, and you guys can offer services to that individual. So I know that sometimes that comes up as a question, but the law specifically states that, but also under guidance from the federal government, you are able to assist people that perhaps have difficulty speaking, reading, and writing in the English language. On slide 12 of the PowerPoint presentation, it lists all of the eligible applicants. Because we are in a competitive year, We may get applications from individuals other than local education agencies, also known as LEAs, which for Florida, that would consist of our community colleges and districts. But we do have services that are rendered through community-based organizations, libraries, and other organizations as listed here on slide 12. We have been informed by the federal government on a contingency basis. We're anticipating rolling out about $37 million through this fund. You see here on slide 13 that for adult general, it'll be about $27 million, correction education, about $2.1 million, Native American, $100,000, and English literacy and civics, $6.9 million. I'll spend a little time again emphasizing that the federal government felt the need to provide states with a separate funding stream for English literacy and civics education. So with your adult general dollars, that's the $27 million or the corrections dollars or the native dollars, you can offer English literacy and civic services. But you could also apply for the separate grant that will be under a separate competition, a separate application. You can apply for your county allocation under English literacy and civics. At this time, I'll transition to Zelda Rogers that will give you some specific background about adult education and the direction that the state would like to go.
Okay, as you're completing your grant application, I want to discuss some of the goals that you should address. One is increasing the number of adults served. You can begin to look at your current enrollment, compare it to past enrollment, and decide if there are steps you need to take in recruiting your students so that your enrollment will increase. Increasing student achievement and improving the program and teacher quality fit very closely together. We do require that a bachelor's degree for our teachers, and districts and colleges can add additional requirements. But this is one of the things that we get lots of calls on about, so just know that you can add additional requirements to that. Support the career pathway strategic goals. We no longer have a specific grant for that purpose, but we have embedded those goals into the AGE grant. So, I'll talk more about those in a moment. But also ensuring accurate data collection and reporting. And you're going to hear a lot about that this year, how we can improve in those areas. Now, the career pathway system goals, these are the ones that we set whenever we developed our strategic plan a few years ago, and that's increasing the number and percentage of students that enter post-secondary education. And it's not all about a bachelor's degree or higher, but also a certificate or an industry credential. So we want to ensure that we are increasing those numbers. And if you'd like to look at that strategic plan, that URL is listed in the presentation. So every adult education student should have a career plan using Florida Choices or a similar system. So if you're new to the program and you haven't had access to your strategic plan, please be aware that this is a requirement of this grant. If some of your teachers need training and choices, you can request that through the Adult Education Office. Now, our 12-13 data shows that 27% of the students transition to post-secondary education. Our goal in the next 5 years is to increase that to 50% who will transition by the following academic year into post-secondary education. So that is an aggressive goal, but we hope to do that, and the reason is because that's what they need to be able to get a job that pays enough to support a family. So as you look at those system goals that I've just gone over, we're going to be putting a lot of effort and resources into four major goals, so improving learning gains, secondary school completion, post-secondary enrollment, and improved employment. You will see in the actual grant these components of the adult career pathways. So as you look at the support services, correction and planning, we want to be sure that you're integrating that. Partnerships, an example of a partnership would be even with an employer. Maybe a local employer has a need for welders, so you may offer the GED program in the morning and then a CTE program in the afternoon. And Gloria will caution you in a few minutes that you cannot spend adult ed money for CTE. But with the partnership, you can figure out how you could divide those costs up. Professional development for all instructional staff to ensure that there's consistent implementation. And then contextualized instruction. Now, this would really benefit your students so that they can see some of the industry and occupational data and jargon, vocabulary, whatever you want to call it. So that would be a good thing to be adding into your adult education program. And then a lot of you are already developing bridge courses between adult education and post-secondary education. So we really recommend that you continue with those. Now, some of these things that I'm mentioning, I want you to be aware of some of the things that we've planned for professional development this year. Our priorities are going to be the College and Career Readiness Standards implementation. And we're going to be offering a series of workshops. Right now, we're looking at 20 regional, and this will be for the ABE program. And we're recommending that a team at a minimum go, and that would be an administrator, perhaps a staff development coordinator, a lead teacher, and then additional teachers can go as needed. But we would at least want that team. This is going to be a major change with our ABE program as we do these shifts into the college and career readiness standards. Career Pathways Accelerated Models. Last year in December at the Career Pathways Institute, we began to look at an IBES model. And that's similar to what I just described when I was going over the Career Pathway goals. So that is something that we'll be offering more support on this year and providing information as well. So some of the things that we will be sponsoring, and these kind of workshops, we will be promoting those through our Institute for Professional Development for Adult Educators. That's called IPDE. So those are the workshops that they'll be doing around the state, but now the state will also sponsor webinars, the training calendar, and other resources that will be on the IPDE website. Choices, TABE, CASAS, and accountability workshops. Some of these will be on the training plan that we will submit in September, and other things like the choices and TABE and CASAS, if you want a state person to come out and do that, that's by request. So we will have the face-to-face regional workshops on college and career readiness. We will not have the institute like we have done for the last 2 years. So we're going to be rolling out more and more of that into the ACE conference. So as you're planning your professional development for the year, we just wanted you to be aware of the workshops that would be going on so that you could plan for your teachers to attend these and plan any expenses that might be associated with that. But at least with having 20, it could be, in many cases, a drive to and not necessarily a stay over the night before. So as we're looking at our performance targets, you're going to hear more about that as we go through the presentation. But we've been asked a lot of times, you know, if we don't meet our targets, if the state doesn't meet their targets, what will happen? Well, the good part, if the state did reach their targets, is we would receive incentive funding. We received that several years ago, and that's how we began. We had almost $1 million, and that's how we began our Career Pathways initiative. So what the state does is we negotiate our targets with OCTE, and they gather these from all the states that get funding from them, and then they give a report to Congress. And these are the folks that fund adult education nationally. So it does make a difference on those outcomes. They're looking at what's going on in all the states and making sure that there is some return on their investment in doing this with adult ed. So I'm not going to talk about the program improvement plan because Kara McLaurin will go into detail about that. And I believe that So in summary, you know, just be sure to look at that and make sure with the ACE and all the workshops and everything that's going to go on that you include that in your application. And you may be asking, well, where does that actually come? If you look under staffing, it talks about trained teachers. That's where you would want to put that narrative about what you're going to do with professional development in your area.
Thank you, Zelda. Thank you for that, the background information. As we move forward in reviewing the information in the PowerPoint presentation, I am on slide 22. This slide just simply gives us some information to remind us of the due date. Because it is a competitive grant, the application must be in the office on or before May 19, 2014 at 5 p.m. I will caution you to submitting things overnight at the last minute. We've had situations where overnights did not arrive, the competitive process concluded, and the agency was not funded. Please prepare in enough time that you can get it here. Try to avoid that last-minute drive over on the 19th. Things happen. We cannot and we're not authorized to accept any applications after the due date. We will be soliciting and looking for volunteers to help us in the review process. We have a link on our website where you can register to be one of our reviewers. What I found out, a lot of our new adult ed directors, this is a perfect opportunity for you to volunteer as a reviewer. It gives you an opportunity to see, read, and evaluate some of the other programs throughout the state. The good news is it's a web-based system, so you can do it from the comfort of your home, comfort of your office. You simply put the evaluation scores in the system, press submit, and it's done. So it's a really easy process, and we really streamlined the process, and we probably cut off 3 to 4 weeks of the review process. The application will be read by 3 independent evaluators, and we will take the average of those 3, and we're looking for a minimum score of 70 out of a 100 scale. The program period will be July 1, 2014 through June 30, 2015. We do fund in a multi-year funding cycle, which means from the federal government, in order to be eligible for funds in subsequent years, you must first have participated in a competitive process. So when we say multi-year, this is the opportunity to get in the cycle. We will continue through 15-16. We also have the option to continue the same group of eligible agencies into 16-17. So this is the opportunity to get in the door. Once you get in this opportunity here, you will and may be funded 3 years or 4 years in this cycle. We make that decision here at the agency. In those subsequent years, if we continue without going through a competition again, your continuation is contingent on the success of your performance outcomes. So performance will become is very important, and we will be evaluating your performance as an indicator of success and as an indicator of whether or not you will continue funding. The next section of the PowerPoint, I'm going to specifically get into the RFP, and I'll be working back and forth between the RFP. On slide 25, again, we'll give the link where you can find all of our RFPs. I first say please read the RFP application information. You will be surprised the number of applications that we receive, and we can tell just from the narrative information and how they package the document that they did not read the entire application. Please be mindful that as a reviewer, the reviewer would be looking to see if you packaged your information correctly, if you use the checklist to ensure that all parts and pieces are included in the document. We do have a series of forms that are required to be submitted in addition to the narrative. On the next page, our narrative is about 20 pages. We want a maximum of 20 pages to answer the components from 1 to 7. Again, this excludes all of the required forms that you'll find necessary in the submission. We ask you to please follow the narrative component format. It is very, very, very helpful as an evaluator that you're able to read it in the double space and using a reasonable size font. We've had all sorts of trickery with them trying to reduce the font size so that they can add more pages or more information within the 20 pages. You are required to follow this format so that it will allow the evaluators to have an easy, smooth read of your information and complete the narrative in the sequence as provided in the document. This section on slide 27 is when I'm really going to take a little moment and kind of flip through the RFP and kind of go over some highlights of the RFP. I'm looking at the adult general proposal, and I'm on page 1 of that proposal. And Zelda has done an outstanding job giving you some of the goals and priorities of the application, and I'm in the center of the page. We will really be looking in the narrative component that you are considering these things when you are submitting your application, increasing the number of adults served, increasing the achievement of our students, improving teacher quality, career pathway goals, and accurate data collection and reporting. On page 2 of the RFP, you will find the information about our state accountability and program improvement plans. In this particular application, we will not ask our applicants to submit any projection or perception data. Some of you that are listening in on this evening's call and are familiar with how we deliver adult education in the past, we have asked you for your anticipated enrollment, your anticipated completion. Well, we are moving into the direction, as Zelda mentioned, that we want all, are we requiring and want all of our providers to meet the state target. So once Florida has negotiated our state target, that will be your performance target. That's your goal. What the state is required to do, that's what we're asking our locals to do. And as Zelda mentioned, over a period of time, we know that we can achieve this goal. We will be looking at information that we will calculate from our national reporting system, also known as the NRS, from tables 4, and I think I heard Tara said table 5 as well. So you don't have to do any work because what you normally submit to the agency through your college reporting data system, through your district data system, or through your 3 submissions from our non-LEA system, that's where we're going to gather and calculate whether or not you have met or exceeded the state target. In the second year is when we will evaluate to determine if you met or improved, then we'll move into an improvement plan. And I'll let Tara spend a little bit more time speaking on that when you hear from her. We are available for technical assistance to our awarded agencies, and I mentioned awarded agencies. Because we are in a competitive process at this time, we are limited to not being able to speak directly with our providers at this time regarding the submission of the application. But once we have awarded our agencies and you have a need, a local need, you can contact Zelda Rogers, as she mentioned about the various professional development opportunities that will be available next year. You can contact our office, and I'm sure she can work with you to provide you with the necessary technical assistance. As I move on to page 3 in the request for proposal application, it just reminds us of the due date and the amount that's available and looking at the allocation chart attached. I will caution you especially to our newcomers on the line that have not submitted applications in this process. We award by a county, a geographical county distribution. In some of our larger metropolitan cities, we may have multiple applicants that deliver or wish to deliver service within that area. So please be mindful, just because you were the awarded agency in past years does not guarantee you that you will be selected as the 2014-15 provider. So I strongly encourage you to follow the guidelines. Also, perhaps you would like to collaborate with other providers in the area. In some of those large areas, districts and colleges, they offer, but we have a lot of smaller community-type programs that could partner with our larger programs. Perhaps it's easier for the participants to go to a community center or a local church rather than being lack of transportation or what have you to get to a college or a district site. So we strongly encourage you to reach out to the community to try and serve as many participants as possible and try to reach out and throw the net across the entire community. As I continue to look down on page 4, I've mentioned about our multi-year award based on Section 231A of the Adult Education and Family Literacy Act. So this is the opportunity to get in the door. On page 5, Terms, Conditions, and Assurances, your agency head, college president, superintendent, executive director, will be required to sign Terms, Conditions, and Assurances. Our colleges and districts, your leaders already, we already have that information on file, and you do not have to sign it or update it unless that agency head has changed. For our private colleges, community-based organizations, you will be required to submit this information each year, signed by the appropriate agency head. For our private colleges, community-based organizations, and other qualified eligible applicants, there's some additional post-award information that will be required if you are selected as one of our providers. You will not be required to submit this information by May 19th. At the bottom of page 5, top of page 6, you will see about 6 additional items that at the post-award, that is after the evaluation process is completed, we have notified you that you were selected as one of our providers. The program manager will then ask you to submit to them those 6 items. This is to ensure that we are treating our community-based organizations, faith-based organizations, the same as our colleges and districts. So pre-award, you don't have to send that information. Post-award, you will. DUNS number is a new item that is required by our federal government that must be submitted in your application. You will find that on the signature page form where your agency head will sign, you have a new box on that form. It slightly looks a little different from the page of the form of the past where you have to insert that information. Getting into the narrative component, I briefly went over the criteria and instructions on what to submit and how to submit it. I just want to emphasize the criteria items within each of the narrative components. It is so important that when you're writing your response that you follow the guidelines and the outline, because as a reviewer, I will ask that reviewer to look at the narrative response in each of the component sections and ensure that they can answer and address each of those criteria items within the budget within the narrative section. So if it's the program section, it will be wise to make sure that in your need, you can document the need, provide some demographic data to demonstrate how within your community, adult education is definitely a necessity and a need. your plan and design, past effectiveness and past experiences. Again, we know that as a new provider under adult education and family literacy, perhaps you have not been awarded through this federal program, but yet you have offered adult ed services through a private or your past instructor in adult ed services, or you worked in another capacity with education, maybe not adult ed. You want to make sure that you're able to document that, rather that document that you have past experiences supporting adult education and providing quality adult ed services. Staffing, I think Zelda mentioned in the staffing component how this will be the perfect opportunity to talk about professional development training for your staff. Under coordination and coordinating your program, it is so wise to, again, think about how you can collaborate and coordinate with other interested parties with adult education. Many times you have to contract out services. Perhaps you're contracting out the professional development. Perhaps you're contracting out the actual instructional services. On page 11 of the RFP, it speaks a little bit about contractual services and the requirement of that document. When you submit your application, you are writing your proposal. You are writing what you are proposing to do in the 14-15 year. Perhaps you are proposing to contract out some of the instruction in a smaller community within your metropolitan area. But at this state, you do not have an actual contract signed by that vendor, but you know that you want to contract it out. Here is where you would write in your proposed collaboration. Hopefully by May 19th you've met with that vendor, you've talked to them, and that you all are in agreement that if you receive this award, that you will be able to collaborate perhaps with professional development or instructional services. Then you would write that collaborative information here. If it's monetary or non-monetary collaboration, this is your opportunity to talk about those partnerships. If you are awarded the dollars and you wrote into your application that you will be collaborating through contract service agreement, you will be required to provide us with that executed contract prior to the issuance of the award. We will not be able to award you your dollars unless we've had an opportunity to review the contract service agreement. And this is to ensure that you are getting fair market value, making sure that your deliverables are clear, outcomes are outlined, so that we know that you are spending and awarding your federal dollars in accordance with our state and federal guidelines. A helpful tip we have on our website, a PowerPoint presentation outlining how to develop, write a contractual service agreement. The Department of Financial Services, they produced a lovely document on how to write a contract service agreement. It's also on our page. So if you're not familiar with that process, please use those resources to assist you. Flexible scheduling and support services. This is one I'll emphasize. Under the law, it allows flexibility in scheduling. It allows you to offer support for individuals with disability. It offers you an opportunity to support people that perhaps would have a barrier with entering the program. And that barrier could be the state tuition fee. We've received a number of questions regarding, can you use the federal dollars to pay for the state-imposed tuition fee? My response to that question would be, there is nothing in federal law which prohibits you from using the federal funds to minimize barriers entering your program. And what I simply mean by that, nothing that says you can't. So the answer will be yes, you could use your federal dollars to support students that perhaps could not pay the state fee, and that may cause a barrier. However, it is not highly recommended that you do that. You should not use federal dollars to subsidize state-mandated costs. So we strongly encourage you to solicit private donations, use other fund sources to assist where you can. But we always get that question. So you can do it, but I would just caution you to make sure that you do not consume all of your federal dollars to subsidize a state-imposed cost. On the bottom of page 11, it talks about English literacy and civics, and I mentioned to you in the opening that under the adult general ed dollars and service, you can offer English literacy and civics, and you can offer family literacy. We just ask that if your program want to specifically hone in on English literacy and civics, perhaps you would want to apply for the standalone civics dollars rather than use the general adult ed dollars for that purpose. As we look at management information systems, we do have high standards and we have high expectations to ensure that the data is collected accurately and reported accurately. So make sure that on page 12 on your information management system that you have solid systems that can collect the data, report the data accurately. I think Tara's going to spend some time talking about some of the minimum requirements in regards to data collection. On page 13, that is talking about how to evaluate the effectiveness of your program. We know that the NRS is just one measure, one indicator of success by your output and how we can determine whether or not you have met the state performance target. But I'm sure there are many other ways that you are currently using to evaluate the success of your program, and we would like to definitely hear about those. Support for the Department of Education strategic plan. It's not a scored item. You are required to submit a narrative response for that, but it's not a scored item. On dissemination, we want to know how are you targeting your students, how are you in recruiting your students, how are you sharing the success of your students, how are you getting the community involved with your program. This is a great opportunity in that section. The budget. I could probably spend 45 minutes just talking about the budget, but I will say to you that the budget, our evaluators, our program managers will be looking for some key things. We want to make sure that the charges that you are including in your budget are reasonable, allocable, and necessary. And it is our job to make sure that we understand, accept those three things, reasonable, allocable, and necessary, and we have to sign off on that. So I strongly encourage as you are writing out your budget narrative, if you are preparing for professional development, that you follow the guidelines in giving us the who, what, when on the narrative so that we will have fewer questions to ask in the negotiation process. How the process would work, again, you submit your application, goes through an outside review, comes back, we have a list of recommended agencies, the commissioner approves that list of recommended agencies, then you will get a phone call. You will get a phone call from one of our program managers saying, I'm sure you noticed that your name has been posted on our website as one of our recommended funded agencies. They would have reviewed your application. They would have looked at any comments that the evaluators wrote about your application, and they would make any necessary corrections. And then they will work with you. If additional information or revisions are necessary, they will work with you to ensure that all of that information is submitted and you can then get your award. The bottom of page 15 and the top of page 16 kind of gives a general idea on how we fund our programs. Our districts and colleges are funded through a cash advance and reporting system. Our non-district and college and governmental agencies will be funded through a payment reimbursement or reimbursement with performance. You would have to literally upfront the services and expenditures, and then you would submit to the department an invoice providing evidence that you paid for the instruction, the teacher salary, that you paid for the instructional material, and that you have successfully had some student outcomes, education completion points or functioning levels, and that you've worked with, what are they called?
Literacy completion points.
This is my second time doing this presentation today, guys. Literacy completion points. And so you will provide us with the evidence that you've done, that you've mastered that, and we'll be able to reimburse you with that. Again, if you're selected, you will get a phone call. One of our program managers will walk you through the process. So don't worry about that part. On page 16, you'll see financial requirements and information. I just want to caution you to our Green Book. It's an excellent document. It provides all of the pertinent information implementing federal programs here at the department. You will find that that is a document you will use pretty often when you're determining next steps regarding amendments and modifications to your application. You will receive something called a Project Award Notification, also known as a DOE 200. And that document would be the official document to inform you that you can then obligate funds. What we typically do here, all originals are submitted to the agency head, and in many cases, college presidents and district superintendents. It may take a while to get to the right department, either to the dean or coordinator or director. So our program managers will scan and email our deans and directors, our contact folks. We will email you that award notification immediately. And with that award notification, you can then go to your finance officer and begin to encumber activities. But I strongly recommend that you do not encumber costs unless you have in your hand that DOE 200. On page 17, this provides some information on administrative costs and indirect costs. We do have a cap at 5%. That's inclusive of administrative and indirect costs. However, under this act, there is a special rule that if your agency feels the need that your administration costs should be negotiated for this federal program, there is a process called a special rule. Out on our website, also listed in this application, we've provided you the website. If you'll go and read that information and follow those instructions, we will consider. We do not necessarily have to grant special rule. In my 14 years, we've done one. And even after going through all the hoops for that one, that agency decided, nope, I don't want to do it. So I just wanted to let you know it is an option, but it is at the discretion of the agency. Financial consequences simply mean if you don't perform, we have the right to partial pay, not pay, or in the area where our districts and colleges have drawn down the money, to request a refund. So performance will be the key to keeping your dollars. At the bottom of page 17, the Department of Education offers a grant fiscal management training for our CBOs and FBOs each year. It is a required training. It usually comes out many times in the fall, but you will get notification. You will get a direct notification from the Grants Management Office. And I also know that they attempt to put the training online. It may still be out there, but I know that they update it each year, and you can come to Tallahassee to take the training. With that said, as you are writing your budget, please consider to put funds in your budget to attend this training. Under project performance and accountability, I'm going to skip that a little bit and continue on in the presentation, and then I'm going to let Tara come in. But keeping in line with the presentation and the order of the presentation, I'm on PowerPoint slide 28, where we're reminding you of the number of applications, copies, and the original that we need. We must have an original. I recommend Blue Ink. It's easier for us to determine that it's an original, but do have one original and seven identical copies. And why did I say identical? Because in some cases we've had individuals, for whatever reason, don't check the copy machine when they're copying and pages are not copied. Once the application gets here, we must send to the evaluator exactly what you send to me. So I strongly encourage that you take your time to make those seven copies and that you don't copy in advance. We had a situation in our 11-12 competition where the individual copied her seven copies, got her agency head signature, and then added some additional information. So after looking at it again, she added some additional language. The reviewers had a different version from the original. And as the reviewer were contacting me saying, reviewer one, well, I don't see anything in her application referencing this document, referencing this answer. And I'm looking at the original, and I'm saying, oh, but yes, it is. So please remember to make those copies after you have secured all signatures to ensure that you provide us seven identical copies. You must send it to the address listed on in the PowerPoint. That address is also listed here in the PowerPoint as well as in the RFP. That's our intake office, and that intake office will certify that you meet the approval, substantially approvable status to enter into the competition. If the application not deemed approvable, then you cannot enter the competition. And what you submit, because it's a competition, what you submit to them will be the information they submit to us. So you can't come back 3 days later and say, oops, I forgot, I need to add this additional information. To keep the process fair, we must do it this way. And in the 14 years I've been working and conducting this, I can truly say we've not had any challenges or problems with the process because we have to keep the process fair and equitable for all. The signature page, as you know, requires that you have an original signature from your agency head. I'm going to turn to that page and just caution you to a couple of new sections. They revised the form, but it's pretty self-explanatory. But they're asking for, I think, the DUNS number and asking for a fiscal contact, a mailing address, and a physical facilities address. So make sure that you don't copy the application that you used last year. Make sure you read this one and make sure you submit the correct document. On slide 30, I basically went over that earlier about the expenditures and the expectation of your expenditures, reasonable, allocable, and necessary. Remember the whom, the what, the why. So as you're expounding in your narrative, we can read that narrative and it will tell the story, what you propose to spend your dollars on. Slide 31. Some examples of various budget items we've seen in the past. remind you of the contract service, materials and supplies, administrative costs. These are some typical budget categories that we've noticed. Remember, on the form, on slide 32, you have a function and object code. Our districts will be required to do the function and object, and our colleges would do only the object. Our private agencies, you will provide us with your chart of accounts. And with that chart of account, we will be able to match up your cost categories with your agency's chart of account. Slide 32 reminds us of the administrative costs, and slide 34 reminds us of the performance target for each functioning level. We negotiate that with OCTE, or the Office of Career Technical and Adult Education, on an annual basis. Each eligible recipient will be expected to meet the state target and show improvement, or show improvement, thank you. And if the agency failed to achieve at least 90% of the target or failed to show improvement from the previous year completion rate, then adult education and program improvement plan will be required. And in Tara's discussion, I think she'll speak a little bit more on that. Slide 26, again, reminds us of that contract service agreement, and you're probably wondering, why do I keep repeating it? You'll be surprised. In many cases, this one thing can halt the award notification, and you can take months to get your award notification because you did not think it through and provide the right information in regards to contract services. So if you choose to contract out, make sure you think ahead and provide all of that information. Again, this is a reminder of our DOE 200 and that information. Slide 38, you're required to submit an end-of-year report. It's called Financial Report. It's entitled a DOE 499. And you're required to submit a program income report entitled 499A. Last day to encumber funds will be June 30th, 2015. You must close out and report everything to the Department of Education by August 20th, 2015. I mentioned to you earlier that all of our private, not-for-profit, non-LEAs will be required to submit 6 additional items at post-award, and you will be notified of that, and we will work with you to ensure that you can get that information. I provided a couple of resources here. We talked about the Adult Education Act, our quality assurance and monitoring tool. That's some information that we have available because all of our agencies are subject to an on-site or desktop monitoring review. So if you want to know what will they look for, what are their work papers, you can look at this particular document and it will provide you with our policies, procedures, and protocols. The OMB circular, EGGR, A133 compliance supplement, all of those documents as they currently stand are linked on our website. I will caution you for some of you that may be up on this, the federal government has issued a new document called a super circular. It's a consolidation of the OMB and EGGR into one document. Many of your finance officers are probably already aware of this. It does require some major organization changes and procedures to be implemented. The Department of Education will be providing some training later this year on the super circular. The super circular go into effect July 1, 2015. So they've pretty much given us a year to work on our policies and procedures to make sure that we're ready for implementation July 1, 2015. If I can toggle back to the application, And then I will open it up for Zelda to speak on English literacy and civics. I'm on slide on page 18 of the request for application or request for proposal for the adult general. We had a question and answer period of time that is already closed. We had it from the date of post through April 21, 2014. We have posted two sets of questions and answers. I strongly encourage you to go back and look at some of those. They may be able to assist you with submitting your application. At this time, I'm going to pause and kind of let Zelda chime in and speak with you a little bit about the English literacy and civics. And then I'm going to transition right into Tara that will talk with you about our performance and accountability system.
Okay, just a few comments about the ELC grant, EL Civics grant, and there are some similarities, and Gloria will go over the differences whenever she gives her presentation on that. But the main purpose of this grant is to integrate civics education into the English language instruction. And students that are involved with this will learn more about their community and the services that are offered there. Participants will also understand and navigate government, educational, workplace systems, key institutions such as banking, health, and others. So in the activities that you would be integrating into the English language classroom would be problem solving, understanding local resources and services, citizenship instruction, how you become a citizen of the United States, understanding and using labor market information, and even if they were using a program such as Choices, they could find out about the jobs that were available in that area and other resources that would lead them to that information. And there are a number of other activities that are listed in the RFP. Now, instruction must cover certain content areas. So the rights and responsibilities of citizenship, the naturalization procedures, civic participation, even if that's going to the school that your children go to school and go to the meetings and everything. But these are ways that you can be involved in what's going on in your community. Mm-hmm. Also, U.S. history and government, getting some basic knowledge of the history of the United States and some of the key events and roles that different people have played in our government. So this is a federal requirement of the EL Civics, so all of these should be covered in your course. Now, in talking about the professional development, for the last 2 years, we have had regional workshops with EL Civics. And not only were they talking about activities that you could integrate into your classroom, but also talking about strategies for teaching. So we will continue to do that this year. I think the last couple of years we've had national trainers. This year we're looking to have some Florida trainers. So again, as you're preparing your budget and looking at professional development and looking at the staffing and how your teachers are going to be trained, this is something that you might want to consider, them being able to go to those workshops. And those will be offered through ACE of Florida. There's also a free online course that the federal government has developed, and that URL is listed. And Phil Anderson has also developed a teacher handbook. It's been out on the web for a couple of years, and it includes a lot of resources that you can use. Now, one thing you do need to be aware of in this is that the ESOL program, the course number is 9900040, and that is listed in the grant. And this is the only ESOL course that you can integrate civics into.
Okay, Gloria. Thank you. I think we'll transition right into Tara.
As has already been discussed on this call, there is a performance component to this grant process, and that is a statutory requirement of the Adult Education Family Literacy Act as well as the Workforce Investment Act. Of course, data is very important in terms of the incentive dollars that we potentially could receive, as Zelda explained, and as part of our overall accountability process. The grantees that are required to collect and report data that is submitted for NRS include agencies that are providing instruction in adult basic education, adult secondary education, both adult high school and high school equivalency prep. Note that does not include co-enrolled high school students enrolled in adult high school, and English for speakers of other languages. Annually, we are required to submit a state-level report to OCTE. That is an aggregated data report that includes all the information submitted by the various agencies that receive grants. It is required every year by December 31st. To assist, there are somewhat uniform reporting systems with common definitions and terminology across the nation. In the state of Florida, we use educational functioning levels. These are reported as literacy completion points and are derived assessment scores that are given. Every assessment has a certain scaling system to it. And again, it is tied to performance for continued funding. Some of the unique reporting requirements that are specific for NRS may also be specific for if you are participating in workforce funding. However, from the view of NRS data, students have to be enrolled for a minimum of 12 contact hours in the program year to be NRS reportable. Please note that this is a cumulative total. It is not 12 hours in one course or one program. We do add up the total, and as long as the student has met the 12-hour minimum, and two of those hours can be the initial pre-testing of the student. So it is very imperative that you collect information on every single student and the contact hours that they're in there, not just wait until they hit 12 hours to officially enroll them. For the purposes of NRS and any sort of performance funding that the state may have, an educational gain is calculated from the lowest educational functioning level that the student enrolled in. So say the student enrolled in both math and language arts, but their language arts score was lower. We would look at the language arts and any gains that they made from that for purposes of performance. Distance education courses are allowable. However, they do have some specific requirements. They must require on-site proctored assessments to be NRS reportable, and the calculation of the instructional hours also has to somewhat mirror our classroom hours. And as I mentioned earlier, co-enrolled high school students are excluded from NRS eligibility. So the way that we view performance is students who have completed a level, and that's measured as gaining an educational functioning level over the course of the program year, one or more functioning levels. This is reported through LCTs. We look at students' initial placement in both adult-basic education and ESL students in the lowest educational functioning level, and that is once again derived from a pretest given. There is a very specific technical assistance paper on adult education assessment. I would highly encourage you to look at that. I would encourage you to look at all the assessments that are available for that program, not just necessarily the one that you have been offering in prior years. There may be a better fit for you. In addition to reporting learning completion points and test records, we also collect information on some follow-up items. For those of you who have been offering adult education for a while, you may remember that this used to be goals. It was replaced beginning with the 12-13 year. We collect information related to the entered employment, retained employment, receipt of a secondary school diploma or GED or high school equivalency, depending on where we go with that, as well as placement in post-secondary education or training. Please note that the information related to entered employment, retained employment, entered employment, part of that information is collected on the student intake form. And then the actual employment piece, while you may be collecting it locally, it is derived using state reporting system, so it's not something that you're reporting to us. Other data that is collected, highest level of schooling completed and location of prior schooling, that's U.S.-based or non-U.S.-based, that should be collected on the student intake form. It only needs to be collected one time when the student has entered into adult education. There also needs to be a mechanism for capturing your personnel who are involved in adult education, not just those who are 100% funded through your NRS grant. It's anybody who is providing services that are supported by NRS. We need to know the number of part-time and full-time instructors, administrator, and support staff, the number of years of teaching experience, and the type of teacher certification. For those of you that are with colleges and districts, I would highly encourage you to work with existing systems that you have in place. And if those are not sufficient, then you will need to develop a local system for collecting this information. NRS data is collected at the local level using standardized records or forms. We did provide a sample intake form. It is not a required intake form. You are certainly welcome to develop your own local intake form that maybe has additional information. However, be aware that there is specific information that does have to be collected, and that's what was included. Intake staff must be able to collect and record NRS measures related to age, ethnicity, race, gender, employment status, prior schooling level, and location. The last bullet on there, employment status, prior schooling level, and location, that is self-reported information from the student and does not have to be documented. There was a memo that was sent out on April 23rd regarding employment status that provided definitions and codes. I would suggest you definitely review that document because that becomes effective for the upcoming school year. Teachers must collect information and report attendance, collecting and reporting student progress, assisting with goal setting, and reporting other missing information. When we talk about NRS data being reported, many of you are familiar with the mechanism of this. It is not something that you directly report to OFTE. It is something that is submitted to the state system, and then the state then uploads that information at a state level. Each of the different types of agencies have their own reporting mechanism and window. For those that are in districts, they would be submitting their information through WITIS or the Workforce Development Information System. For those of you that are in colleges, you would be using the Florida College Student Database. And for those of you that are CBOs, you would be submitting through individual student records through a web-based submission that's similar to the college but is not the college's. Please be aware that all three of those have separate reporting windows, and those reporting windows should be posted sometime in July, so you want to be aware of those. Of course, we don't just want your data. We want you to be using your data to drive improvement, to look for any reporting issues. As a result, some of the best practices that we're saying that grantees should be using are using locally standardized student intake processing and achievement forms to make sure that the information is being uniformly collected across the agency, collecting individual student records in a relational database, collecting data monthly at a minimum, particularly if you have multiple school sites, to make sure there are not reporting issues. You want to make sure that as you are collecting that data, you are running edit checks to make sure that the information is valid. And you want to be producing monthly reports for program improvement at the local level. When you submit information to us, the turnaround time for us to be able to get information back to you is quite lengthy. So to be able to do on-site program improvement that's very relevant to the active students, you really need to have a mechanism in place. And of course, being aware of your reporting timeline so that the information is submitted during that prescribed time. The data is collected annually and submitted. The prior year data is used to drive some of our targets that are set for the upcoming year. Of course, these targets are currently under negotiation, so please be aware, as Gloria had mentioned, that the targets that were included in the packet are subject to change, but you will be held accountable to whatever the final approved targets that we have from OFTE are. As this described, we do have approved performance measures. In the past, you were developing your own performance measures. Moving forward, we will be just simply looking at your performance compared with the state target rather than a local target. You are expected to at least meet the target, and that is defined as coming within 90% of that target or show improvement from a prior year. Those who do not are, of course, required to complete a program improvement plan. It's really important that you are evaluating and you are trying to achieve that target so that overall we can achieve our own. Here's some contact information on slide 60. You're welcome to give me a call if you have any questions about some of the data elements or the data values. If you have questions about data that has been submitted, there's an MIS contact there for you. You are also welcome to contact directly the main contact for the reporting system, so Bruce Harrington or Joan Roddenberry, if you are with WITIS or the college system.
Thank you so much, Tara, and thank you, Zelda. As we wrap up the review of the request for a proposal, I'd like to take us back to the application, the proposal that we were reviewing. It's the adult education, general education. I'm on page 18. I just want to go through some additional documents that support all of the things that Tara has provided for us and Zelda. Again, the reason why I simply reviewed the adult general application is because English literacy and civics, corrections, and Native American are pretty much the same. I do want to caution you to the English literacy and civics application. The narrative components are not 100% the same as you will find in the other applications because they're asking you to write specifically to how you're proposing to implement English literacy and civics. Please do not just copy your same responses that you use under the adult general ed. I strongly advise you to read that civics application and make any tweaks to your responses so that it will match up to the requirements as outlined in the civics application. Again, the target there for the civics application is slightly different than the target for the others. The one section that I just want to caution you to would be the method of instruction, delivery. So just make sure that you are looking at your civics education application and keeping that one separate. As I wrap up the review of the application, I just want to remind you of the method of review. Again, we're going to send it out for evaluation. The department and commissioner reserve the right to increase or decrease, make any changes to a proposal so that it would meet the department standards. Equipment. In some cases, our programs need to order some equipment to support instruction of the adult general education. There on page 20 of the application, I want you to look at that. The federal government has a threshold of 5,000, whereas the Department of Career and Adult Education, we've imposed a 1,000 thresh, which means if you're purchasing something with a unit value of $1,000 or more, you will need to submit the equipment form with your application. However, if you look back in the federal records under EGGR Section 80.32 for equipment, all equipment, all items purchased, all small items, large items purchased with federal dollars must be inventoried. So sometimes when we come out from a compliance review, our agencies would say, well, we don't have that information. We weren't required to keep it. If you use the federal dollars to pay for that item, you need to keep a record of it, adhering to 80.32. Record retention, You must maintain the records for a minimum of 5 years. If you are in an audit situation, an audit finding, and you're working through a resolution, you must keep the records 5 years after the close of that audit finding. I mentioned that you do have a requirement to submit an ending financial report, which will be a 599, and program income 499, program income 499A. Intellectual property, please read that. 22, supplanting and for a program. Please be mindful of this. We probably don't have a lot of concern in this area, but I do want to caution you to supplement or supplant. It basically means if you charge that expense somewhere else prior to this federal award, you basically can't move that expense from the prior place that you charged it over to the federal program. So I'm going to use an example. You have state workforce funds, and you hired a teacher, and that teacher was paid in the current grant year by the state workforce fund. Now you were awarded your federal program award, and you want to switch that teacher from the state to the Fed. That's supplanting. That's supplanting. So be mindful of expense and costs that are reoccurring that were charged someplace else. We've spent a lot of time talking about the reporting system and the NRS and your obligation that if you accept our federal dollars, you have a requirement under the law to meet the National Reporting System standards. On page 23 of the request for proposal, the monitoring, we will monitor our programs either through desktop or through on-site. Be mindful of that. Use our resource guide. Look for amendments. Please follow the Green Book as your governing document. After you are awarded, you can always call your program manager to determine whether or not that amendment that you are proposing is necessary, or you could just make the simple change. But please use the Green Book as your first guide. GEPA is a required federal response. It is required in your narrative, so please be reminded to submit your agency's GEPA statement. And equity and access, it's not anything new. It's been around forever and a day. However, the compliance director asked me to make sure I include this, and Gina, include this in the application, because that was the number one common finding in the current program year. Please talk to your equity coordinators if you're at colleges and districts. If you are one of our privates, please read and follow the GINA equity access requirement. Invoicing procedures, if you, one of the privates and selected, you will follow those procedures. Again, don't worry, because if you are selected, your project manager will work with you, go over and help you submit your reimbursements and help you determine your performance goals and help you set your performance goals, remembering that the performance target will be the state target, but they will work with you under the post award to make sure that you provide all of the documents that you need in the invoice process. So the invoice information and the application for now is for information purposes. You will find if you are granted the award, we will take time to go over that with you. On page 25, I just want to caution you to how to packet your information and submit it to us. Secure the original and 7 copies individually with a removable binder clip in the upper left-hand corner. Do not staple or put the document in its pretty little spiral binders. because we have to constantly send them out, bring them back, and we do that via Overnight Express, it's simpler to just put that clip on it and send them to us. Do not include any tabs or other items that will prevent us if we need it to make copies. And do not add any unrequested materials. We know that you all have wonderful programs and you want to provide us with these beautiful colored brochures and newspaper articles. Do not submit that information. That information is not going to be reviewed as part of the evaluation process, and it allows for a lot of clutter, and we have to pull it out before we send it to the evaluators. There is a form on page 28, which is a required form. We've gone ahead and completed this form for you. It's a required form by the agency that we must expound on how each and every program will measure project performance and accountability. Because your project and performance is standard and it's imposed by the federal government, we chose to complete this document for you. All you have to do is simply take this page, copy it, and insert it into your application. At this time, I'll briefly go over some of the documents in the attachment section. Again, we have the allocation. Just caution you to the fact that we have not received our formal and final allocation from the federal government. If for some reason that when we receive that allocation, it's less than what we had anticipated, we will have to reallocate the dollars and run new formulas, and we will notify you if you are one of the eligible recipients. On page 32, further go into detail about educational functioning levels, educational gain definitions, which is very important as that's the process by which we measure success. Page 33 provides for you a form that is required to be submitted. Your agency will complete the upper half with the agency name and information, and then we provide it for you our proposed state performance targets. And I think we've said a couple of times that we have not as of yet negotiated with Octave the final performance measures for 14-15. However, when those final performance measures are determined, we will make sure that they are posted on the Adult Ed website and posted on our grants website, and all of our applicants, awarded applicants, will be held to that standard. Under the Regional Workforce Board and Coordination Form, this is an information document. You're not evaluated by it. It's just a method by which we are meeting a federal guideline that says we are coordinating with our workforce systems. Our workforce system is now called CareerSource. You've heard it under a number of names, the One Stop,
Workforce Florida,
but the current name, CareerSource, you have those offices throughout the state. You are basically giving them the information. They don't really have to approve anything. It's for information purposes because many times they receive people from the community that may be in need of adult ed services. So by you providing them with a copy of your application and the information, they will be able to refer participants to your program. That is one of the a great collaborative partner that many of you should consider. If you haven't reached out to them, that you reach out to them and make sure that you're in partnership with receiving their participants. All of the invoice forms and reimbursement forms, that information that we will need on post-award if you are selected and you are one of our privates. We have provided for you the DOE Form 100A and the budget form. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but we took the time to give you an example on how to put together your budget narrative. If you will follow this format, it will make it very easy for the evaluators, and it will make it easy for the program managers as they are determining whether or not your budget items are allocable, necessary, and reasonable. At the very end, you'll see a checklist. You are required to use this checklist. Make sure that you are organizing your documents as outlined in this checklist. Remember, post-award, there are a few things that we will contact you for directly if needed. Page 35, I kind of missed over that, but Tara mentioned that in her discussion, data collection requirements for the NRS student data summary form. We kind of summarized for you in this one document all of those things that you must collect in regards to your intake and student data. You can add some additional things that perhaps your agency would like to collect, but at a minimum, you must collect the items there listed on page 35. At this time, I'll ask Julie to give you some information, and then I'll open up for questions and answers.
So this is Julie, and I'm the contact for the survey for this conference call. If you would go to our website, which is posted in the PowerPoint presentation, we have a survey for you to take online, and we do read all of those responses that you submit, and we would appreciate any input that you could give us for that. And on that same website, we have on our website and in the PowerPoint presentation, there is a link there for anybody who would like to become a reviewer for these applications. You can go there and register to review the applications.
Thank you so much. And I just reiterate something that I heard Julie say. We do take our surveys serious, and we do incorporate those recommendations that are reasonable. We do try to incorporate those recommendations into the process. At this time, I'm going to take you off conference mute.
Presentation mode is now disabled.
Here we go.
I will remind you to please place your phones on mute. Please place your phones on mute. If you would like to ask a question, you can unmute your phone. Only if you're asking a question, unmute your phone by pressing star 6. I am now open for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please give me your name and the agency that you represent. Are there any questions?
Hello, this is Rochelle Abrams from Leon County.
Yes.
And I'm working with the corrections grant, and I'm wanting to know if we can use grant money for treatment centers or transitional housing centers for people that have left prison or left the jail and are transitioning back in. There's a number of transitional housing centers. Is that an approved expense or no?
The criteria for eligibility goes back to the target population. Anyone 16 years age or older meeting that criteria. So it really doesn't matter where they're located. If they're eligible for the program under the federal law, you can deliver the services in multiple locations. And
this is for the corrections grant where it has to be an incarcerated individual.
Be incarcerated. So,
or in an institution.
Yes.
And there, it says like there's one spot where it says halfway house or other things, and I didn't know if transitional housing is people are leaving the prison and trying to transition back into the community, if transitional housing.
Yes, anybody that you serve in corrections, they should be very soon to reenter the workforce,
yes.
You know, to leave prison.
So the people in transitional housing would be?
When you say transitional housing, are these individuals confined to that facility?
I think they're allowed to go out. I mean, they're required to go out and get jobs and do other things.
But they come back to the transitional house location? Are they
right?
Related?
They live there. They have programs there.
The answer is
just,
yes.
I think they've left the prison and then they're in a transitional position.
If they're released from the prison.
If they're released from the prison, then the answer is no. that transitional housing service should come under the adult general education. But if they are incarcerated and still confined in one of those institutional facilities, the answer is yes. I think the operative term here you use, they have been released from the corrections program.
If they're released, they're not available. How about treatment centers, like drug treatment centers where people are court-ordered to be there?
That is not under the correction guidelines. If you look on page one, we're looking at prisons, jail, reformatories, and work farms. All of those things, detention centers, are things that they typically cannot leave. If there is a halfway house that is confined, institutionalized, yes. Community rehabilitation, we really want to serve. You can still serve them, but perhaps not with this fund source. Perhaps apply for the general.
Okay, so if they're allowed to leave during the day to work, then we're not allowed to serve them?
Are they still part of the criminal justice system?
I will check further. I was just trying to get a clear understanding of who we are and who we aren't allowed, because I was trying to broaden my base other than just the county jail.
Another way to formulate the question, are they required to be in the halfway house, or are they there by choice? If they're required, the answer is yes. But if they're voluntary and by choice, it would not come under the correction fund. It will come under the general fund.
I know with one of the drug treatment places, they said that some are required to be there and some are there by choice.
Only the ones that are required. However, you can apply for the adult general and serve them all.
Right. Okay, thank you.
But if you want to call and talk with me or Zelda specifically offline regarding your specific situation, please feel free to do so. Let me give you my number.
Okay, thank you.
850-245-9053. I can speak with you after the submission of the application. I can only answer questions that are outlined on the application if you call me. I cannot go into a lot of detail about your particular operation to keep it fair.
But I can call you before I submit the grant?
You can call me, but I'm going to read for you what is printed on page 1 and 2.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any additional questions? Hearing none, then I would like to thank you on behalf of our Chancellor, Dr. Duckworth. And I look forward to work.
Gloria?
Yes?
Can I ask a question? I do have a question.
Okay, and who?
This is Marilyn Macero from Collier County Schools.
Okay.
And you did mention that with federal dollars that we do have to inventory items under $1,000, and we have been doing that. But my question is, where is the line? Where do we not inventory? Because we buy things that are very small and very inexpensive, and I guess you might call them consumables, but where is the line?
If you look at Edgar, $80.82, it will give you.
Okay.
And you don't have to document consumables, but you do have to document things that are considered equipment. And we know in technology and in that super circular that I'm talking about that's coming out, they really enhance this section, because you can buy tablets and a lot of things that are less than $1,000 now that a lot of people want to consider to be supplies. But those are things that can quickly walk away from a facility and get lost. So I strongly encourage you to use your better judgment in regards to equipment item or those things that you know that you've bought. Consumables are not considered equipment items.
I'm talking, what I'm looking at or thinking about is now we just bought new calculators for the new GED, and they were $22 a piece, and we bought quite a few of them.
No, ma'am. That's considered a supply.
It's considered a supply, so we don't have to, it was only equipment.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Hearing none. Thanks again for joining in the call this afternoon. I look forward to working with you in the 2014-15 program year.